Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play Stores.
Everybody, welcome to Two Off the First for September 20th, 2022. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Great to have you with us. We are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort. Two stories for you today, as is the title of the show. And actually, one of our stories just kind of happened because I'm lollygagging a little bit and took a little too long this morning to get things going with the podcast. We did our golf betting podcast, The Press, first. I didn't do one yesterday. So kind of all worked out because we get ourselves a story here from the LIV golfers. 50 LIV golfers signed on to a letter that was sent to Peter Dawson, who's the chairman of the governing board of the official World Golf Ranking. He's also the former chief executive of the RNA. And it's dated September 16th. So that's Tuesday. I mean, look back at the calendar. Basically, the start of the week for the LIV golf event that they had in the Illinois, in the Chicago, quote-unquote Chicago area, an hour outside of Chicago. And the letter is an appeal to Peter Dawson to award official World Golf Ranking points to LIV events, despite the fact that they all know, and very well know, that they don't meet the requirements, they haven't been around long enough, and that the people on the board of the official World Golf Ranking are diametrically opposed to LIV and anything that it might stand for. But hey, letter's a letter. And so the letter is not that long, actually. I'll go through the highlights, but it is not that long, and a bunch of people have tweeted it out since, but worth taking a look. Anyway, one of the key things here. So the second paragraph says, "To maintain trust, we urge you as one of the true statesmen of sports," so they're really kind of fluffing them up here, "to act appropriately to include on a retroactive basis," which is also insane, "the results of LIV golf events in OWGR's ranking calculations. An OWGR without LIV would be incomplete and inaccurate, the equivalent of leaving the Big Ten or the SEC out of the U.S. college football rankings or leaving Belgium, Argentina, and England out of the FIFA rankings." That's soccer. First of all, the Big Ten doesn't need to be in the college football playoff ranking because they're never going to win the college football playoff. So if you left them out, it might just speed along the process and get us to Alabama, Georgia a whole lot faster, or maybe someone in the Big 12 gets in the game. But I think that's a missed point there, so to speak. No football pun intended. Says, goes on to say, "Some 23 tours are integrated into the OWGR universe, and LIV has earned its place among them. Except, key problem here, under the OWGR rules, you have to exist for 2 years, you have to have 72 hole tournaments, you have to average more than 70 players in the field, and there are some other requirements that they don't meet. So, no, they actually haven't, and that they just kind of glance over that is pretty remarkable. It says, "Four LIV golfers have held the number one position on the OWGR, and one is currently number two." That's Cam Smith. LIV's roster includes 21 of the last 51 winners of the four majors. The level of competition at the average LIV event is at least equal to that at the average PGA Tour event. It is, in fact, not even close. We know because we've played in both. No, you don't. Next paragraph. "Every week that passes without the inclusion of LIV athletes undermines the historical value of the OWGR. As time goes by, LIV golfers automatically decline in the rankings." It's actually not technically true under the new system, because the way that the system has changed, not playing some events is actually better than playing some events with the new formula for determining points for events, because points are now lower across the board, or at least almost exclusively across the board, particularly in limited field events. So had LIV actually gotten points, a lot of these guys would actually just fall down the rankings worse anyhow. So that's something they don't understand about the ranking. Anyway, the next paragraph is, the case for Liv's inclusion is strong, but we have concerns that members of your governing board are conflicted and are keeping the OWGR from acting as it should. Four of the eight members have connections to the PGA Tour, which unfortunately views Liv Golf as an antagonist. Other members of the board have made unfairly harsh remarks about Liv, with one calling the organization, quote, not credible, end quote. Kind of wraps everything up, basically trying to fluff up the folks at the OWGR, particularly Peter Dawson. And they kind of ask, how can such a system possibly exclude players competing at such high levels against some of the strongest fields of the year for large purses at such high-profile events? I mean, that's a load of crap, but okay. We understand that Liv Golf formally applied for admission to the OWGR in mid-July. As best we understand, that's true. And I'm pretty sure the OWGR even confirmed that back then. We hope the story we read today, which was, by the way, in Sports Illustrated, and more or less a plant from Liv executives to say that Liv Golf feels like they're being slow-walked by the OWGR, even though they clearly have a clearly defined process and they don't meet all the requirements. We hope the story we read today about the decision being slow walked so Liv golfers will slide down and to harm Liv is not accurate. It's not accurate. It's good. We call on you to render a positive decision quickly for the benefit of the integrity of the rankings, the game, and all of us who love the sport. After all, the fans deserve rankings that are inclusive and accurate. Failure to include 48 of the world's best golfers would mean the fans are being denied what they deserve. And then all the guys DocuSigned it. So kind of fun, you know. Kind of fun to read the DocuSign, see which guys like did their actual signature. And if you ever done DocuSign, they give you like a choice of a font for your signature if you just want to type your name that looks kind of like script. Like Bryson DeChambeau and Bubba Watson clearly did that. Some other players did as well. Matthew Wolf doesn't know how to sign his name. He doesn't know cursive. So he just basically wrote it in print. Thought that was kind of interesting. And that's mainly because my kids are at the age now where my son just learned cursive a couple years ago. My daughter's about to, and they go to a school where they teach it. And I know that there are a lot of public schools that don't teach it. My kids go to Catholic school. For some reason, they still teach it. I don't understand why, but I kind of appreciate it because apparently I read a piece about, I think it was in the Atlantic, about kids not being able to read cursive even though they know how to read. So very interesting. Anyway, all that to say, this letter is completely disingenuous. It doesn't make any sense. And it flies in the face of everything that we know about Liv, the official World Golf Ranking, Peter Dawson, the people on the board. So, I mean, they do have some points in here. I'm not going to say there aren't some points in here, especially the stuff about the governing board. The governing board is filled with people who don't want Liv to get official World Golf Ranking points. And by the way, they also didn't bring Fred Ridley's name into this because the chairman of Augusta National is part of the board for the official World Golf Ranking. And if they would have brought him into it again, I think it would have been a problem because there has been some talk that I've heard from people who know Fred Ridley directly, who deal with him regularly, that he is not happy that he was mentioned. Now, Augusta National Golf Club isn't represented in the board technically by Fred Ridley. It's by Will Jones, their executive director. But Fred Ridley's the chairman of the club. His vote means something to whatever happens here. If you look at the rest of the board, we've got PGA of America CEO Seth Wall, who has very much come out opposed to Liv. You've got Martin Slumbers, the head of the RNA, opposed to Liv. Mike Wan, who is the CEO of the USGA. He has more or less said we could create a system that we could keep the Liv golfers out if we felt like it. Jay Monahan of the PGA Tour, Keith Pelley of the European Tour Group. And then the International Federation of PGA Tours is, their representative is Keith Waters. I don't know Keith very well, but more or less this is a group of people who have already expressed disinterest in giving points to Liv or trying to give any kind of credence to Liv. So, I mean, I guess you got a point there, but everything else really just doesn't make any sense. So, just another thing for today. You know, good stuff. Here we go. Okay, move on. We got the President's Cup this week. That's kind of the main event of the week. It's in Charlotte at Quail Hollow. They have rerouted Quail Hollow. So what they call the Green Mile, 16, 17, 18, is no longer the finishing portion of the course. I believe it's the finishing portion of the back nine. But if you look at the rerouting, it is kind of interesting to try to set this up. Again, you're trying to set it up, if you're Davis Love, for the Americans' preferences, to give them the best chance to win, but also to get to holes that maybe they like better. So the first eight holes is the same from the original routing. But then for the President's Cup, the normal 12th hole is the 9th hole. And then the 10th through 15th holes will be numbers 13 through 18 on the normal routing of the course. So the Green Mile holes, we know is 16, 17, 18 if you're watching the Wells Fargo Championship, will be 13, 14, 15 in the matches. And then the closing holes will be numbers 10, 11, and then back to 9. I have not followed this on a map. I've seen tweets about it. But it is kind of interesting that they've chosen to do that. The total yardage is effectively still the same, but it tops out at nearly 7,600 yards from the tips. There are three par fours over 500 yards. There are three par threes over 200 yards. I think they are trying to tell us they want the guys to be able to hit the long ball. And if you look at the U.S. lineup, you can see why. You see who's on the team. It makes total sense. It is one of the tougher courses on the PGA Tour. If you look at it, even before it became a host of the PGA Championship, and when Tom Fazio came in before and did a bunch of work on the first five holes and changed some holes, added three holes, just kind of made big differences. This is set up for the longer players to just bash the ball with somewhat of impunity. Davis Love has said the rough is basically 1.5 inches throughout the entire course, so effectively not much rough at all. It's cut down. Everywhere is fairway. There is some penalty for hitting it very poorly, but not that much. You're going to take some spin off of it, of course, when you're hitting from rough as opposed to really tightly mown fairway, but I don't think that's the point of the setup. The point of the setup here is to let the Americans bash the crap out of the ball, force the internationals, which generally across the board are shorter players. They're not longer players, taking out Taylor Pendrith probably from that part of the equation. But by and large, they're medium length, maybe even short length players. And you're going to force them into longer clubs on every hole and make it difficult for them to score points. So that's the setup point, right? We've also got some ideas of who is going to be going out with one another. Now, if you can figure this out pretty quickly, Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay are definitely going to play together. It doesn't get simpler than that, right? And I don't know how you don't play them together. They won the event in New Orleans, the team event this year. They like playing with one another. They're good friends. They vacation together. They're absolutely going to be playing together. And then you start to kind of figure out other teams. And you go there. I think the Americans are going to go with a lot of the similar stuff that we've seen from the Ryder Cup. Obviously, this is all kind of integrated now. So you're going to see some similar squads from that. I think it'd be interesting to see Scheffler and JT go at it. You got to figure out Sam Burns a little bit. You got to put him into play. You've got Kevin Kisner as part of it. You got Max Homan to integrate. And we'll see some of that over the coming days. Probably today we'll get a better sense of what that starts to look like. And then Wednesday we'll obviously have the real stuff going on, right? You got Billy Horschel as part of it as well. So, it's tricky to try to make all that work. But for the internationals, I don't think we really have a clear sense of who all is going to be together, whether they're going to try to do it as countrymen as best they can, whether you're going to have a Canadian team of Connors and Pendrith, are you going to try to do an Aussie team? I really don't know what they're going to go with yet from the Immelman perspective. But if you look at the betting odds, the market is not convinced. The odds have gotten longer. The Americans are minus 700 to win. So what that means in betting terms is you would have to bet $700 to win $100. Conversely, the internationals are plus 700 to win outright. Which means if you bet $100, they would give you your $100 back and $700. You get $800 total. You would have to bet $700 just to get your $700 back and $100 if you bet on the Americans. If you wanted to bet on a tie, which is possible in this format, you would get plus 1,600. That means 16 to 1. That is extremely rare. The only time that ever happened, they had a playoff for it. So I don't even know if you could technically even count on that actually happening. It's just, it really is set up for the Americans to dominate and to play extremely well. I've not seen anything out there in the betting market. And we talked about this for our betting podcast about the Americans to win by Saturday. That is not out there. There are actually odds for the single session on Sunday, but we have 4 days. It starts on Thursday, which is a nice thing about the President's Cup. It goes Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The other thing that I really like about the President's Cup, and even though they've tweaked this format over the years, is that it's harder to hide guys. You got to put players in. You got to make them compete. You can't just leave them alone. They have to show up and play and try to earn points because there are more points available. I like that about it. I also like that the captains don't blindly select matches. They don't submit picks blindly and then draw based on slots, and you don't know who's in what match. You can set up matchups in this, and I think that's particularly cool for Sunday when you get to the singles matches, because then you could set up showdowns, because what often will happen is a team will be way behind. They will send out their best players first, and then they'll try to rack up points and then see if they can just somehow scrape their way to a victory based on the back end of the lineup. The team that's typically ahead doesn't necessarily do it that way. They stagger it a little bit. Usually you kind of send out a guy to set the tone, maybe two guys to set the tone, depending on the strength of your team. You'd send out some players that they're not sacrificial lambs, but they're not necessarily expected to wallop. And then in the blind format, in the middle, you kind of have your okay players, and you have a couple at the back end just in case you need them. And that typically doesn't wind up being the case, but that's how that strategy works with a blind draw. In this case, a couple different reasons, we may get some bangers. One, the Americans may be so far ahead, they may not need many points. Or two, Trevor Immelman may give the people what they want if it's close. And I think if it's close, he's going to try to match up his best players with the best American players in hopes that they are a level match or even close to level, and that they can maybe either draw a match or get a surprise point here and there and make it close. I think we're going to get some good matches come Sunday for either of those reasons. And I think it's something to look forward to. I know that the average ranking of both teams is down a little bit compared to prior President's Cups. That is a product of LIV, particularly on the international side, because they took away the South Africans. They took away several of the Australians, namely Cam Smith, who would have obviously helped the average ranking of this team and would have changed the calculus on the captain's picks. There were four, now there were six because of Smith and Joaquin Niemann leaving. So, you know, we're just going to kind of have to see how this plays out. But I do think that there is some value to it. I do think there is some intrigue here. I think the U.S. has to work very hard to not give the internationals any kind of bulletin board material. Don't appear overconfident. Don't celebrate too early. Don't think you've got it in the bag, even though you probably do. And you've got to be able to play the golf. I mean, at the end of the day, you still got to be able to play golf. Quail Hollow is a challenging course. There are plenty of places where you can get eaten up. If you get eaten up, there are plenty of opportunities for the internationals to score surprise points. And if they score surprise points, I think they're going to start to feel a sense that maybe they can do something crazy here. I don't know where you would put it scale-wise. If there were an upset, I don't even think we need to consider that yet. But maybe Miracle on Ice territory? I don't know, something like that. And that could, if they make it interesting, if they make it compelling, and they did last time out, by the way, in 2019. They made it compelling. They came out of the gates really well, forced the Americans to work for it. The Americans won, but they forced them to work for it. If they can do that here on, quote-unquote, foreign soil this time around, I think that could portend something good for this series. I know the internationals need to win desperately. We talk about this every time we do this. The internationals need to win. They only won once and all that stuff. But if it at least shows a sign that they got competitive, that they were close, even with every player that left for LIV out of the pool, I think that could be a good thing for the series. Do I still think ultimately this thing needs to become a mixed event with LPGA players, international and U.S., along with PGA Tour players, you know, male and female players together? I think that's the way to go. I think that's the way they should do it moving forward, but we shall see. And I don't think we're going to get anything about that this week. No one's going to talk about that. That would be kind of diminishing to the event, perhaps, or at least perceived as such, to have to change the format, change the inclusion process. But if they wound up going that path, I think it would be a tremendous win for this event. It'd be a tremendous win for women's golf. It'd be a tremendous win for really everybody involved. It would make it fairer. It would make it more equal. It would be a bigger stage. It would be different. It would be fun and compelling, I think. But that's for another time. Meantime, I think we've got an interesting setup here. Again, could be an absolute smoking by the United States. But I think at least in the setup, there is that very outside possibility, to at least make it interesting. And that's all you can hope for in these kinds of events. Keep it interesting. I know we loved a good route in the Ryder Cup last time out. I don't think we feel the same way as American golf fans about the President's Cup. I think most people want it to be close, or at least competitive. So hopefully we get that. All right, that's going to do it for us today on Two Off the First. Thanks so much for tuning in, listening to the show. If you subscribe to us through a platform, you can do reviews. Please give us a 5-star review. Helps us reach more people. Shoot me a note at Ryan Ballingy. You can DM me on Twitter or just reach me publicly. Either way is cool. And you can follow Golf News Net on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf News Net. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you tomorrow.
When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat, and boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.